Penny Lane, there is a barber showing photographs of every head he's had the pleasure to know, and all the people that come and go stop and say hello. On the corner is a banker with a motor car. The little children laughing at him.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to A Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Scott Beatty. I'll be filling in this week as host before we hand over the reins to Brian Barnhart, the new host of A Penny for Your Thoughts, beginning in 2018. Today, we'll do something a little special, spend some time listening back to some of our favorite conversations that happened here on DWS throughout 2017. But before we get to that, just a brief word of thanks to Jim Turpin. I'm grateful for all that he's done here as a host of this show for many, many years. It was an honor for me to be here for just a brief portion of his career, and I know you'll enjoy Brian as the host of A Penny for Your Thoughts, too. Now, let's get to reminiscing. Back in May of this year, U of I graduates were treated to a commencement speech from Nick Offerman. The U of I graduate is a star actor known for his role in, among other things, NBC's hit series Parks and Recreation. He's also a woodworker, and took some time to talk with our Tim Dittman before his commencement address. Here's their conversation from May of this year.
Nick, thanks so much for joining us. I am told that University of Illinois Chancellor Robert Jones called you personally and asked for you to speak this weekend. What was it like when you got that call?
Well, it was even more otherworldly. I was at a fundraiser at the Estimable Japan House, and he approached me personally, and I have to say, I don't know if you've met the chancellor, but he's quite dashing and very persuasive, and so I was rather smitten. He said some very inspirational things to me, and next thing I knew, I was marking this date off on my calendar.
So without letting the cat out of the bag, maybe give us a little bit of a preview about what your message will be to the class of 2017.
Well, I've found, you know, when people put me in a position to pass on any sort of advice to others, particularly young people, I am best served by regurgitating the great Jedi lessons that I've received from my own wise men and women in my life. And so always with a sense of humor, I'll be passing along what I've concluded to be my own best life philosophies.
And it's interesting that you bring that up. I was looking at recent interviews you had done in preparation for this interview, and I can't remember the publication, but the interviewer referred to you as a professional dispenser of wisdom, and you've kind of made that into a second career of sorts. Did you ever think that you would be known for that sort of thing?
Well, no, and it's important to note that I'm not someone who thinks up the wisdom. I'm just someone who has perhaps a vocal quality that is comforting to many listeners, and so I take what much smarter people than me have thought up and just pass it along, perhaps in a slightly repackaged form.
So back to your speech for a second. I have seen your stand-up on multiple occasions, both live and through the wonders of the internet. And, of course, you and I both know it's a little on the risque side. How much of that are we going to see on Saturday? Are you looking to keep things pretty clean?
Well, it's a celebration, and I want everybody, I don't want anybody to be upset. It will be by my standards, it'll be quite wholesome. But for those who require some mixed material, I think the current count is three pieces of prurient language.
So that's the quota.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen Catholic priests get away with more than that, so I think I should be safe.
Talking with Nick Offerman, he will be the speaker at University of Illinois commencement this weekend. Nick, I should have mentioned this off the top, as many of our listeners already know, is a graduate of the University of Illinois, Bachelor of Fine Arts, back in 93. It's been well publicized, the time you spent at Japan House and at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Both of those are still going strong, as you know, on campus. I'm curious, though, if you had any other haunts that you spent a lot of time at on campus, and if you had any good stories to go along with those.
Well, gosh, I mean, the theater department really, you know, had us happily under the lash. You know, we were 24/7 theater rats. So if we weren't in a play or rehearsing a play, we were building scenery or sewing costumes, or you know, somehow figuring out how to do our next play. And when we weren't doing that, we were working graveyard shift jobs to so that we could afford beer for immediately after our play. Although, you know, I mean, I really love the twin towns of Champaign and Urbana culturally, the Art Theater in the Virginia and the Station Theater in Urbana, and especially Folinger Auditorium on the Quad. When I was there, they put on this program across the year that I think was called the Marquee Series. And I saw some performances there, including Laurie Anderson and the Kodo Drummers, an incredible guy named Rindy Eckert, that were really life-changing. I mean, you know, Champaign-Urbana for me was sort of an incredible gateway city from my small hometown of Minooka, Illinois, to the rest of the world. You know, I really had my eyes opened culturally, and a lot of it had to do with all of these great cultural centers. It was also an amazing place on Green Street called Record Service. Is that still there?
It does not ring a bell with me, but
it was your dream record store back when we depended upon physical forms of vinyl and CDs. It was the day of the CD, and also there used to be a little jazz hippie food joint coffee shop across the street from the Krannert Center called Nature's Table, which I know is also gone. But you could get a fresh, warm half baguette for 25 cents, and for another quarter they'd slather it with butter. So that was what a lot of us broke theater kids subsisted on.
So I know when some people come back to campus after being away for a while, they kind of fit into two groups. Half kind of say, oh, this is the home I know, and half come back and say, wow, I don't even recognize this place anymore. And you especially mentioned Green Street, which, as you know, is all high rises now. When you come back to campus, what kind of emotions do you feel?
Well, mostly, yeah, I mean, there is some of that, but that's happening all over the country. I mean, the amount of construction that we're undergoing the turnover is incredible. Every city in the nation is festooned with cranes. So there are heartbreaks where you go to see some old the alley in which we used to love to urinate is no longer there, or it's now too brightly lit to ever get away with achieving such relief. But mainly, I feel a very strong sense of nostalgia. That's absolutely counterbalanced. Any sense of loss I feel is far outweighed, particularly by, Japan House was originally this old, you know, two-story farmhouse on Lincoln, right east of the Krannert Center, and now it's a huge, shiny medical building. And so while I miss that beautiful house and its garden environment, all curated by Shozo Sato and his students, the new Japan house with its incredibly beautiful park-like grounds, to me, it gives a relief to any sense of loss. Instead, it's so satisfying to see how that has blossomed and continues to inspire countless more students and the public in general. I'm very grateful to be able to be one of the supporters of that beautiful institution.
Talking with Nick Offerman, who will be the keynote speaker at University of Illinois commencement on Saturday. Well, Nick, before I let you go, I want to give you a chance to give any final words, at least in this interview, to your followers in Champaign. I know a lot of people are excited to have you in town. Anything you would like those folks to know?
Gosh. Well, you know, it's an incredibly divisive time in our country. And so when I'm touring as a humorist these days, I just kind of touch briefly on politics. And I say, regardless of whose side you come down on or how frustrating you're finding the current situation, let's just remember that we're all in this together and try to hug one another before we punch. Hug before punch is my motto.
That was renowned actor Nick Offerman talking with our Tim Dittman back in May of this year. In this edition of A Penny for Your Thoughts, we're listening to some of our favorite conversations from 2017. Still to come this hour, we hear from an astronaut and a new basketball coach. In the second hour, the mayors of Champaign and Urbana, a superstar country singer, and two dear friends that we lost in 2017. But in a moment, we turn to the world of science and climate as we hear from one of the foremost thinkers in her field. Welcome back to A Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Scott Beatty. I'm filling in this week. Brian Barnhart will be in the chair beginning in 2018. Today, we're listening back to some of our favorite conversations from 2017. We turn now to the world of science and climate. Catherine Hayhoe is a climate scientist and considered one of the foremost thinkers in her field. She's the head of the Climate Science Center at Texas Tech University. She earned her PhD from the University of Illinois, and in 2014, she was named to Time Magazine's list of 100 most influential people. This year, she was named to Fortune's list of world's greatest leaders. Ahead of an appearance at the U of I in April, she shared some time with us. Here's an excerpt of our chat. I don't know how we can boil this down into just a few minutes, but what's the sum point at this juncture in our climate?
Well, we all recognize now that something is happening in the places where we live. Something is different. But for many of us, we still see this as a distant issue. You know, maybe it's only really going to affect or matter to my children or maybe even my grandchildren. Or maybe it's just about the polar bears up in the Arctic. The reality is that climate change is already affecting us right here in the places where we live. And something that's most important to me, it is disproportionately affecting people who are already poor and already vulnerable and don't have the resources often to cope with what life is throwing at them. So we're going to be talking about what climate change means to us right here where we live in the Midwest in Illinois. But we're also going to be talking about what we can do about it, because often we feel like it's this giant problem that no one can fix. I'm just one person. What difference can I make? And so it's easier for us to kind of just dissociate from this issue than to take it on feeling like there's nothing that we can actually do that matters.
I go back to grade school, and I was hearing about these issues with Save the Earth type, but I feel like it's just been a problem that keeps getting worse and worse and worse. Do you have a negative outlook or a positive outlook? Are we making any headway?
Well, the reality is that the Earth is going to survive. It's more about saving us at this point, us people, because our civilization is built on this assumption that we don't often think about, and that is that climate is stable. It governs our building codes, the size of the air conditioning or the furnace that we buy. It governs what types of crops we plant where, and it certainly governs where we put our cities. I mean, today we have two-thirds of the world's biggest cities with hundreds of millions of people in them within just a few feet of sea level that is rising twice as fast now as it was 30 years ago. So as a scientist, when I look at this world and I look at how these rapid changes are affecting real people today, I'm very concerned. But at the same time, there's some incredible things happening. The clean energy revolution is taking over the world. And although people in the U.S. are trying to hang on to coal, the reality is that in countries like India and China, they're embracing wind and solar energy. They're putting $360 billion into the clean energy economy in China to create 13 million new jobs. Down where I live in Texas, we already get 12% of our energy from wind, and they're building more every day. Things are changing around the world, and from a climate perspective, this is good news. We just need to make these changes a little faster. But one of the most important things that we can do as individuals is probably not what you'd think of. We're always told, you know, recycle and change our light bulbs, and it's true that if every home in the U.S. changed just one light bulb into one of those new LEDs that you can get at Home Depot or Walmart, it's true that if every home did that, it would be like taking almost 800,000 cars off the road just like that. But the reality is one of the biggest things that we can do about this issue is talk about it. Because when you ask people all across the country, how often do you talk about climate change and what it means for the places where we live and how we should fix it? It turns out most of us have maybe one conversation a year about this. And that is why, for many of us, we feel like, oh, it's not that big a deal. It's not really affecting us now. There's nothing we can do about it. We'll worry about it later. It's because we don't talk about it.
We're speaking with Dr. Catherine Hayhoe, one of the foremost thinkers in climate science and climate change. She's a U of I graduate with her PhD, and will be speaking again on Monday on campus at the U of I. Dr. Hayhoe, you also examine the political forces at play in all this. As you survey the U.S. political landscape right now, what are the major factors going into climate change?
The reality now is that the number one predictor of what we think about climate change, is it happening, is it not? Is it us, or is it natural? The number one predictor of what we think has nothing to do with how much science we know. It simply has everything to do with where we fall on the political spectrum. The more conservative we are, the more likely we are to dismiss this as a hoax. But the reality is that a thermometer isn't Democrat or Republican. It doesn't give you a different number depending on how you vote. Climate is changing. For the first time in the history of this planet, humans are responsible. The impacts are serious. But there are solutions if we act now. And those solutions come from the entire political spectrum. There's libertarian to climate change. There's free market solutions to climate change. There's government policy solutions to climate change. But we're not going to be able to move forward with these solutions if we don't actually get our act together and say, yes, this is a real issue and we do need to address it because it's affecting all of us.
You are very public with your Christian faith as well. And there are many, not all, I want to stress, but there are many in the Christian faith that would align themselves with political conservatives. Do you find yourself in conflict, for lack of a better word, or having to convince a lot of your conservative or Christian friends in this realm?
The United States is unique of any other country in the world. It's the only country where one political party actually says this isn't a real issue. And in the United States, over the past few decades, Christians, especially conservative Christians, have become increasingly associated with the right-hand side of the political spectrum here in the U.S. And for many of us, you know, there's too many issues these days to do our own research on. So what do? We turn on television, we go to our favorite website, we listen to our favorite radio program, and the person speaking agrees with our values on sanctity of life, on faith, on other issues. And so they tell us that climate change isn't real, and we say, oh, okay, it must be a hoax. So true that in the United States, the majority of evangelical Christians and the majority of white Catholics would also say that, no, this isn't real. But there's a growing number, especially among younger Christians, saying, you know what? Like I said, a thermometer isn't liberal or conservative. It's telling us the planet is warming. And in Genesis, the Bible says that God gave us, humans, responsibility over this earth. So we're not usurping God's authority. We were given that authority. And all through the Bible, it talks about not just caring for and taking responsibility for the planet, but especially caring for and taking responsibility for people who are being disproportionately affected today by a changing climate. So yes, it is definitely true that among Christians in the United States specifically, there are many more of us who would say it isn't real than it is. And for all the nasty comments and hate mail that I get pretty regularly, I would say I get quite a few every week. Over half of them are from people who identify as Christians, which absolutely breaks my heart. But things are changing because, again, we're recognizing that around us in the world, something is different. And we're also recognizing that the solutions are not these punitive solutions where the government tells you how to set your thermostat and how many miles you're allowed to drive every week or even how many children you can or can't have. Those aren't the solutions to climate change. The solutions are solutions that grow the local economy, that improve our national security, that wean us off the dirty fossil fuels, which burning today in 2017, burning fossil fuels kills 200,000 people in the United States every year from air pollution. And it offers other countries, poor countries, a safe way to develop and improve their quality of life using resources like the sun and the wind that they have lots of, instead of encouraging them to follow our old pathway, depending on coal and oil and gas, which they don't even have.
Catherine Hayhoe, a University of Illinois alum and head of the Climate Science Center at Texas Tech University.
Lord Almighty, I feel my temperature rising.
When we come back, more of our favorite conversations from 2017. Next up, we'll escape Earth for a bit with an astronaut, and then Brad Underwood's first time talking with us on the radio. Welcome back to A Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Scott Beatty. We're listening back to some of our favorite conversations from 2017 here on DWS. Mike Hopkins is a former U of I football player, but he's made his biggest impact off this planet. The astronaut spent several months in space on the International Space Station, and in April he visited his alma mater and spent a few minutes with us.
Mike, yesterday a record was set for time in space, Peggy Whitson. How significant is that?
Well, I think it's very significant. It's significant for Peggy just to highlight the accomplishment that she's had. But it's even bigger than that, right? These kind of long duration experiences that she's had is important when we eventually go on to Mars. For the program, it's very significant as well, not only for her individually, but just for NASA.
Now that you're several years removed from the long duration that you had in space, how do you look back on it? How did it change you? You talked here to students today about how it changed you physically, but emotionally, spiritually, as a person, how did it impact you?
You know, it's hard to quantify how it changes you. You know, I like to think that I'm the same person now that I was before I launched, in terms of what makes me, but clearly you can't go into space and not look at Earth, not look at the world in a different way, and realize that, you know, one of the big cliches, right? We're all in this together down here on Earth. There's no borders when you're looking down from space, and so that certainly changes your appreciation. It's kind of interesting. One of the I had an opportunity to talk to some kids about, if I could go anywhere in the universe, where would you want to go? And my answer was easy. I said, I want to come to Earth. And sometimes you don't appreciate what you have until you leave it. And so maybe one of the side benefits of going into space was appreciating life here on Earth that much more.
Well, that being said, the goal is to get to Mars. How important is that? Would you like to be a part of it?
Would love to be a part of it. And I guess the reality is I am a part of it right now because the International Space Station is a stepping stone to getting to Mars. And so the data that we're collecting right now is going to shape the systems. It's going to shape the countermeasures that we use to help astronauts stay healthy as they head to Mars so that they can be as effective as possible when they actually have the opportunity to be on Mars. So, you know, all of that is special to be a part of that larger mission.
Will we see it in our lifetime? We're about 10 years apart, you and I. Will we see it in our lifetime?
Yeah, I think we're going to see it in our lifetime. We're a long way from getting there. We've got a lot of work to go. You know, we're working on some of the big things right now, the rocket that we need to get all of that material up into space so that we can go to Mars. We're working on the capsule that's going to be necessary to bring us back to Earth when we're done. But there's a lot of things that we aren't as far along in. You know, how are we going to get from an orbit around Mars down to the surface and back? What are we going to live in when we're there? What are we going to live in during that transit from Earth to Mars and back? So there's a lot of technical challenges that we still have to overcome, and that's going to take time. These kind of things, it's very difficult to do those in just a few years, you know, because it's going to take a long-term commitment to make that happen, and that in itself presents challenges, right? Of staying committed to something for that number of years as a nation, as a country, is going to be necessary.
Is the appeal what could be discovered there that you know could be learned, or is it maybe what you don't know that you don't know about setting foot on a new planet? It's hard to even fathom that.
I think the answer to that is yes to all of that. It is the unknowns. It is, I think it's just in our nature to explore from the very beginnings. And so eventually we're going to get there. If we don't decide as a country, as a people to do it now, someday we're going to. It may not be in our lifetime, but someday, I just think there's too much of a draw that's just pulling us towards that planet. And you know, it's part of it is to understand where we came from, right? To understand the origins of our solar system, of our universe that we live in, and then I think it's important for humanity, right? To have that other option. And again, I'm talking long term, but there may be a time when we need to be able to live somewhere besides Earth.
Yeah. Are there people that ever say, from a philosophical standpoint, well, it's not meant to be. Earth is where we're designed or intended to be, and you're going against what is the design, I guess, for lack of a better word.
You know, I like to think I'm very strong in my faith. And as part of that faith, I believe God has a plan. And who am I to say that plan doesn't include being on another planet someday? I don't know. And so I think if we achieve that accomplishment, I think it is part of the plan. And I think it was meant to be.
I appreciate those comments. We're talking with astronaut Mike Hopkins. He's a U of I alum. What does your job right now entail?
So right now, astronauts that aren't in space, your jobs kind of fall into, I consider, three different areas. You're either supporting the astronauts that are currently on board the International Space Station. You're supporting the astronauts that are in training to launch the International Space Station. Or you're working on some of our new programs where we're going to have commercial crews, so new vehicles that are going to take us to the station, as well as the programs that are going to take us on to Mars. And so most of us end up working in all three of those areas, though right now I have a bit of a concentration on the new vehicles for taking us to the International Space Station. So these are vehicles being developed by SpaceX and by Boeing. And I am going to serve as one of the CAPCOMs. That's the capsule communicator. So I'll be talking to the crews on those vehicles as they're launching and rendezvousing with the International Space Station.
You found some time to serve on the U of I Alumni Advisory Board. What has the progress, what has that experience been like in the last year? What are you trying to accomplish?
So I'm actually working with the Aerospace Engineering Alumni Board. And it was great to come back and see where the department is going, and what's interesting is it's not all just about the technical education piece. They're really interested in developing the total engineer, if you will, that has the soft skills as well, that has the ability to write and to communicate about all this brilliant technical work that they're doing. And so I was very excited to see the department wanting to make sure that piece of it gets emphasized, because I think that's very important when we leave U of I to go out into into industry and that type of work, those skills are a part of it, and we can't ignore that. And so that's been exciting. It's been exciting to come back to campus. I love coming back to campus. It's changed so much since when I went through, 25 years ago. And I think the great thing is it's all positive, right? All of these changes are moving the department, the engineering, and the university in the right directions. And so you always have that sense of pride of being an alumni. And it just grows when you come back and you see all of the great things that are happening.
Can't let you go as a former football player at Illinois without asking you about your perspective on the Illinois football program. Are you able to keep tabs much?
I do, of course. Keeping tabs oftentimes means just being able to watch the game, follow it on a Saturday afternoon. And so I think it's also, I talked about the excitement of what's happening in the engineering program, and I've had a chance to interact a little bit with the athletic side of things, and there's a lot of positive things happening there as well. I think the program's moving in a great direction. I think it's going to be some exciting years coming up for the football program, and I look forward to at least being able to watch that.
Mike, thank you so much for your time.
You bet.
That's U of I alum and NASA astronaut Mike Hopkins from back in April of this year. Rocket Man, burning out his fuse out of every home.
Well, whether you're a basketball fan or not, you're likely aware that Illinois basketball got a new head coach this year. In March, U of I athletic director Josh Whitman fired head coach John Gross. Within a few days, it was announced that Brad Underwood would be the new head coach for the Fighting Illini. Underwood had spent the past season coaching at Oklahoma State University. Athletic director Josh Whitman flew down to Stillwater, Oklahoma to meet with Underwood and brought him back on the plane as the new head coach at the University of Illinois. And waiting to greet him as he came off the plane was Brian Barnhart, voice of the Illini.
Brad Underwood is here. Got your orange garb on.
Absolutely.
Great to have you here.
Thank you.
Give me
pleasure.
Your thoughts as you arrive here and what's going through your mind.
It's been a whirlwind. The last, you come off of a really a hard fought game in which you could have won, and you're in the NCAA tournament. When this came about I had the opportunity to visit with Josh, it's special. There's not very many places I would have ever left Stillwater, Oklahoma, and Oklahoma State. They were fabulous. Their administration, their fans, the players, but I spent 10 years in Macomb, Illinois,
mm-hmm.
and I was around and have a tremendous appreciation for how great Illinois basketball is, and will always be. And I'm kind of an old school guy from the standpoint that I have the tradition and the culture and that's special to me. This is the place, and the time was now. It's been a whirlwind. We're still navigating through things, but I could not be happier. And Josh's vision, we should win. And Illinois basketball is a special place and in a special state. It's the best basketball state for high school in the country, in my opinion. And we got to continue to grow that.
I would think it would help you. You mentioned working at Western with Jim Kerwin, right? About recruiting the state. That gives you a familiarity with what's available out there, right?
Yeah, you spend 10 years running around the state and the St. Louis area, and then back at Kansas State as an assistant coach. We got into the city quite a bit in Chicago and. St. Louis, so those were areas that were I feel very comfortable in, and I'm excited about that, and I have a lot of connections with the AAU programs, and so that excites me, and great players here, great basketball here, and we've got to take advantage of that.
Tell me about it. I've watched your teams at Stephen F. Austin and Oklahoma State, the way they play, the relentless style.
Yeah.
Is that what way you want to do it here?
Well, we were number one in the country in offensive efficiency this year, we're into analytics some. So we figured out that scoring in the first 7 seconds is something that we got good at, actually. We weren't quite as good defensively this year as maybe I want to be, but yeah, we get after them. We force a lot of turnovers. We play a style of play that I think the fans will enjoy, and we're going to get good athletes and good players and start implementing it.
I know you just landed, so I'm sure this will all be worked out in the days ahead. Assistant coaches who might stay, that will all be discussed, I guess, in the days ahead, right, once
yeah.
you kind of get settled.
Absolutely.
Settled
and,
in.
And it's about relationships with me and creating those and working through those. And we'll go about that in the next few days. Mm-hmm.
Coach, great to have you here.
Thank you. My
Welcome
pleasure.
To Champaign.
Thank
Boy,
you.
You've been on the ground for 10 minutes here. So I think you'll find the Illini fans very receptive and warm. And as you know, in this state, the following it has, you'll enjoy it.
Feels like home already.
Thank you, Coach.
Thank you.
All right.
When we return, we hear from the man who is behind famous products like the Chia Pet and the Clapper. Welcome back to A Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Scott Beatty. It's our listen back to some of the best conversations we had in 2017. Earlier this year, Joseph Pedott returned to the U of I for the first time in 62 years. After graduating in journalism, he launched a successful advertising agency and Joseph Enterprises Incorporated, which gave birth to two fairly well-known products, the Chia Pet and the Clapper. Here's a conversation we had in March of this year. Well, you are back to the University of Illinois for the first time in 62 years. You are based in San Francisco now. Impressions so far?
I can't even recognize the campus. I'm looking forward to seeing the quad, but it's awesome. When I was here, I don't know how many students there were, but it's a fraction of the size it is now. It's just amazing. So I'm hoping to get a tour before I leave today.
You made a name for yourself with the Chia Pet. It's something that has become a part of Americana, a part of culture. It's something that is laughed at times. It's something that has been extraordinarily successful. What is the legacy of the Chia Pet in your mind?
Well, it's different. I had no idea it would be this successful, but it works. It's kids use it for educational purposes, and in hospitals they use it, and now we've gotten a little bit in politics. But it's a fun thing, and it's an inexpensive gift. So hopefully it'll go on for a few more years. But it's, I think, about 35 or 40 years old now.
You didn't create it, but you made it big. How'd that happen?
Well, this chia seeds happens to be a very, very healthy seed. And it was first grown by the nomadic tribes in South America because they grow so fast. They would just carry a pouch around their waist and plant them. And then they started to put it on clay and do some decorative things. And an American, in fact, a fellow in Chicago found it, and he brought it out for the first time and was losing a lot of money on it. But I saw something, and I said, if you ever want to sell it, let me know. And so I bought it from him. And what the Chia Pet is now versus what it was then is two different animals.
No pun intended, right?
No pun intended.
The clapper, the device that turns on and off lights with the clap of your hands. What's the story behind that?
Well, two Canadians approached me about 40 years ago with a product called the Great American Turn-On, but I didn't know that they were con artists. They raised $500,000 from doctors. They figured they'd invest $250,000 and pocket $250,000, and never thought it would work. Well, we took it on, and it was very, very successful in consumer demand, but it was blowing out television sets. So when they thought it would work, then they went back and tried to get the stock, all the stock for nothing. So they were sued, and I lost $40,000 in advertising. But I took the idea, hired two engineers to work on it for 2 years to take the concept and make the concept work. And so that's how it developed.
We're talking with Joseph Pedott. He's the man behind the Chia Pet, the Clapper, and a whole slew of other products that are the as-seen-on-TV type things that have become quite popular. Now you're visiting the U of I campus for the first time in 62 years, and you're returning to the College of Media as well to talk with students. What's your message as you've built a large operation and it's very entrepreneurial?
Well, it's going to be very interesting. The media has changed. It used to be called the advertising departments. And Dr. Sandage was ahead of it at the time, and I understand they now have a department named after him, the advertising department. You got to believe in yourself. It's not a 9-to-5 deal. You have to have an imagination. Don't let anybody say you can't do it. If you believe in something, do it. And if you fail, you fail. It just makes you stronger. You get up and you start going at it again. And that's what happens. You just got to believe and invest everything you can in yourself.
There is a lot that is said these days about socially conscious business, business with a good purpose. What you have done over the years with your business has turned into a lot of philanthropy. And in fact, I want to suggest that perhaps that's the bigger impact that you've had over the course of your life with your philanthropic efforts, particularly with helping troubled youth. What's your reaction to that, to the impact of what you've had from a generosity standpoint?
Well, I'm doing it for selfish reasons. It makes me feel good, and it's giving back. And I know how it is to be hungry and lonely and have no money. So I'm trying to help those kids that are in that situation but deserve to reach for the stars, give them a shot at it. So I have set up 3 foundations that just do all that. One is in San Francisco and 2 is in Chicago. In fact, I'll be spending all day Friday with SGA Family Services, working with gangs, leaders, and setting up programs. It makes me feel good, and it's working.
How is it working? What is it accomplishing?
Well, I'm going to meet some of the kids that joined the program and are now going in college, getting in college. And I met one young lady by accident about 3 years ago, and she, African-American lady, about 22, had a little girl about 5 years old next to her, and the president of the organization introduced me and said I was their oldest client, living client, and she should tell me her story. At 16, she got pregnant. Her parents said, "We're going to kick you out of the house or you get an abortion." She said, "I want the baby," so they kicked her out. SGA found her, helped her. She graduated high school valedictorian, is at DePaul University, a senior at the time I met her, and top honors. And I said, "What do you do?" She's going to go for an MBA. "Then what?" "I want to become very successful." "Then what?" "I want to give back."
SGA, for those folks who aren't aware, can you tell us about it?
It's a 105-year-old organization in Chicago that is involved in helping families. I would say 99% in the underprivileged families to get their act together and get their kids out of jail, get them into college, get them into school, and do a turnaround. And they do an amazing, amazing job. And so I'm supporting them. I've set up already one foundation that will have people on their staff forever doing this for kids. And I'm setting up another foundation. It's already set up. We're having our first board meeting in a couple of months.
And this all started because somebody in that organization helped you out?
Correct. I remember I was living at a YMCA, the smallest YMCA with the best bums in Chicago, and they gave me $100 a month, which helped, you know, me just barely make it through high school and into college. And by the junior year in college, I stopped the money and have been paying back ever since.
The reports are that you continue to be very active with not only your businesses, but obviously your philanthropic efforts, that you're working a full work week and maybe even more here in your mid-80s. What keeps you going?
I don't know. I love what I do. I'm just used to working and contributing. And so the Chia Pet is doing an awful lot of good, as well as the Clapper. And well, also we have the Ove Glove. I don't know if you're familiar with that product, and the Chimney Sweeping Log, also very well known.
Joseph Pidot, an alum of the University of Illinois, back for the first time in 62 years. We're certainly grateful that you spent a few minutes with us.
It's my pleasure.
Clap, pat, clap your hand, pat it on your partner's hand, right hand. Clap, pat, clap your hand.
There's plenty more on this edition of A Penny for Your Thoughts. When we come back next hour, the mayors of Champaign and Urbana together on our airwaves. Plus, a music superstar comes to town, and we remember a couple of close friends that we lost in 2017. Welcome back, and thanks for joining us as we move into hour number two of A Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Scott Beatty, filling in. We're looking back at some of the best conversations from 2017 here on DWS. The mayors of Champaign and Urbana are regular guests on many of our programs here, but in October, we did something rare. We had both of them appear together on our airwaves. Champaign Mayor Deb Finan and Urbana Mayor Diane Marlin joined me on the DWS NewsHour for an extended conversation about how they work together and what issues affect both cities. Obviously, Diane, you've been in office less than a year.
6 months.
But how have you guys worked together in this period so far?
Well, we've known each other for many, many years and have worked together occasionally over the years. So since I've been elected, we've attended meetings together. We've had many conversations. We just came back from a trip to Des Moines, Iowa that was sponsored by Champaign County First. So I think we both are very committed to collaboration and working together and taking a regional approach to lots of things, including economic development.
I would also say, from my perspective, it's really nice to have somebody that I can reach out to just ask questions of or bounce ideas off of. So we're both part of U.S. Conference of Mayors. Occasionally, we'll get calls to action. We've been able to kind of coordinate together about how we're going to respond to things from a kind of a community-wide, not just a Champaign or Urbana perspective, and talk about, you know, if there's something they want us to do that'll have some costs, who's going to absorb those costs, and how we're going to get the work done. So I love having Mayor Marlin in Urbana.
Yeah, the big question is who's in charge of Wright Street? Who has to clean that one
Probably
up?
Probably the University of Illinois.
Yeah, we gave it to the university. Yeah.
But no, this is unique because the cities are so intertwined with the university, and obviously geographically you butt up to each other. So what unique things show up in this kind of environment that might not in two other neighboring towns?
Well, I think we try to coordinate. I know something that we've been talking about, or we talked about while we were on our trip, is, you know, simple things, maybe not so simple things, like taxi licenses. We want to not have you have a different set of rules as you cross Wright Street from one to the other. You know, we've talked a little bit about catering licenses, because right now you have to have one in each city. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And, you know, we're working on bigger things like the CU Fresh Start, which Diane has been really involved in. You may want to talk a little bit about.
Yeah,
I mean, just as a by way of reminder, it's been out there a lot, but Fresh Start is a program aimed at curbing gun violence in the community.
Yes, it's an approach, a strategic approach to curbing gun violence, and it is a community-based approach, and it is countywide, but it certainly got its start based in Champaign-Urbana.
How would you, both of you have now seen at council meetings, I guess, study results or kind of updates mm-hmm. that you've gotten from it. What's your assessment of it?
Well, I think we're off to a good start. This is not going to, we're not going to see a solution overnight. The goal of Fresh Start was to reduce the incidence of gun violence, which has been just devastating families and damaging neighborhoods. And I, based on the numbers we've seen this year, I think the trend is in the right direction. But long term, it's not just an issue of ending gun violence, but it's getting at some of the root causes behind the violence. So what about education and jobs and training and family supports and mental health issues? So Fresh Start is the approach that has a specific purpose for on focusing on the gun violence, and then we're of course have incorporated other agencies and organizations to help on the other things.
But the numbers going in the right direction, you First, do attribute yeah. to that to Fresh
no,
Start?
No, well, you know, you can't attribute. I wouldn't point to just Fresh Start. It's a concerted effort among law enforcement, community, and the service providers. There's been a concerted effort among law enforcement to really strategically focus on the people who are most likely to be engaged in violence, and I think that's had a big impact as well.
I would also say that all of our law enforcement agencies cooperating mm-hmm. together has had a huge impact. So it's not just the mayors that are talking to each other, but we have, you know, chiefs and the sheriff mm-hmm. and everybody has come together to put together task force to work on this, understanding, again, like everything else, that, you know, it doesn't stop when you hit Wright Street. And so we can't just see this as a city of Champaign problem or a city of Urbana or even a county problem. We have got to all work together. And that's been really groundbreaking to have all of the law enforcement personnel working together like that.
And it doesn't happen in many places. So we're actually, I think we're very far ahead of the curve here in Champaign County.
I agree.
Special segment here on the News Hour as we are talking to both Mayor Deb Finan from the city of Champaign and Mayor Diane Marlin from the city of Urbana. And you mentioned last week you took a road trip together to Des Moines, Iowa. What did you do there? What did you see?
We mostly focused on economic development. So we spent most of our time with the partnership there, which is kind of an umbrella organization for many chambers of commerce and private businesses. And they do things like business incubators. They also do marketing of Des Moines, and they do economic development. And they... you know, they do an 8-county region economic development. And so for me, I think the biggest takeaway is, you know, like these other things we're talking about, that we need to cooperate together on a larger scale. And we need to start really realizing that to be successful in this region, and even if we start in this county, that we all need to work together. And that's happening at EDC and some other places, but that we need to find a way to focus our dollars and be intentional about what we're doing and not just kind of being isolated in our silos.
Yeah, it's the regional approach, I think, that is the key. And by that, I think outside of Champaign County as well, we need to be looking at a multi-county approach to things.
Do you find any tension, any pushback? Because there are some unique identities to both cities, and other things that you're interested in doing together, kind of pushing towards, but you're finding resistance from either side because people want to maintain their own sense of what they want Urbana or Champaign to be about.
Well, we each have our own identities, and that's one of the things I love about Urbana and want to preserve and celebrate. But also people, from what I've heard from many people, especially during the campaign and after, is people recognize the need for Urbana to focus on economic development and some sustainable growth. And that was one of the things I've pledged to do. So that won't happen in a vacuum. And that means, you know, you have to reach out to neighboring cities, neighboring governments, to our largest employers, and really start working with people. So we'll keep our own identities, celebrate what's unique about us, and then there's many, many areas we can cooperate on.
And we're going to have some unique opportunities with the medical school. Mm-hmm. I mean, there will be, hopefully, spinoff businesses as they look at biotechnology. And, you know, a lot of that will be housed in Urbana. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're going to employ people from all over the county. And, you know, growth in... We are stronger if Urbana is stronger. You know, if they are a partner standing with us that's doing really well economically, there are that many more things that we can do together. And so, you know, we need to stop thinking, oh, that business has to come here. It'd be terrible if it happened over in Urbana. We do have our unique flavors, I guess, you know, and you could be in Urbana or Champaign. And, you know, businesses certainly will pick our cities for different reasons, but we need to celebrate each other and really grow in strength together.
Do you monitor what incentives are out there for businesses to build or develop in your towns and try to keep pace with each other? Are you like the gas stations on the same corner where you got to watch each other's prices?
I haven't figured out gas station prices. But we have similar incentive programs. You know, we have the tax increment financing, we have enterprise zones, we have different kinds of incentives. So those sorts of things are available depending on the project. And we have, you know, staff's very interested in working with people and on interest in supporting businesses. I mean, I think our basic goal is to welcome all business opportunities, all residential opportunities, and do what we can to support them and make them successful. And that's been my philosophy, is what can we do to help you?
And I would say that's been a longstanding philosophy in Champaign, and we continue to work toward that, you know, trying to continue to grow our economy here.
We're talking with Deb Finan, mayor of Champaign, and Diane Marlin, mayor of Urbana, here appearing together, I believe, for the obviously the first time as both of you were
maybe
mayors.
On radio.
But I don't know if we've ever done this before. I'm sure it must be an historical moment. Yeah. Next week or this week, you are taking another trip to the Institute of City Design. Is that right?
Yeah.
And what is that all about?
Well, so
you could do like SimCity games or build kind of. Legos.
Well, so we have this opportunity to present a city planning issue, and they, the Mayor's Institute for City Design, which is through U.S. Conference of Mayors,
National Endowment for the Arts, yes.
They have professional staff in the room, so we will have planners, economic development professionals, and engineers,
and
architects as well, mm-hmm. who will be there to help kind of brainstorm ideas to help solve a city issue. So for Champaign, we're going to be talking about our downtown plaza because we're in the process of, working with the community. We've been taking input on what they'd like to see. We've got professional staff hired to help, with design work. So it's a great opportunity now at the beginning of that project to get some ideas. And we're also tying it into our Neal Street corridor. So as you get off of the highway and you come downtown through Neal Street and you hit the plaza, kind of as we redevelop that corridor, what we should be looking for. So that's the project I'm taking.
A big sign that says News Gazette Media.
Right.
Just this way.
Right this way. Big arrow.
And the project I'm focusing on is the Lincoln Square Hotel and surrounding parking lots, which is about a 16-acre site in the heart of our downtown. And it's especially timely with the announcement of the upcoming auction of the hotel. It's an area that I've thought about for years and years. It's owned by, there are three different owners involved here, so it's a little bit more challenging in that respect. But I think we have to think of that area as a whole and re-envision the entire space. And so I'm excited about presenting this case study and seeing what the architects and planners come up with. And I would like to add that this was by invitation only, and there will be 8 mayors invited to this, and all expenses are paid by the U.S. Conference of Mayors, so no public dollars are being spent on this.
Right.
But I hope to get a lot of public benefit out of it.
Indeed. Speaking of roadways and corridors, yesterday Olympian Drive opened up from North Lincoln Avenue. Congratulations. And of course, that was a project that was many years in the making. My question is, what's now the next step for Olympian Drive? Is there more industry? Do you want to see retail there? You want to finish it out?
Well, I think it's zoned for light industrial.
Light and heavy industrial along much of the Lincoln corridor between Olympian Drive and I-74. Yes. So,
what would you like to see there?
Well, it's already happening. We have a number of businesses there, and we have a Super Value Distribution Center, UPS. We have a number of construction recycling sites. We just approved the latest project, which is going to be a concrete plant. They just purchased 47 acres, and they specifically wanted to locate along that Lincoln Avenue corridor because of the access. So having that connectivity between I-74 over to 57 is really crucial. And we now have a road to somewhere. So we're very happy about that.
Well, and it connects into Olympian Drive, which mm-hmm. then allows people to get over to Champaign. And we have Apollo subdivision
right.
that's already in Champaign. But it's, again, it's part of this partnership. As mm-hmm. we continue to develop that corridor along Olympian, it's going to strengthen both Champaign and Urbana.
And it was, that project is just a good reflection of the kind of collaboration you need. It was a $14 million project total, but the overpass over the railroad track was all federal dollars. And then the
$6 million.
Yeah, and then the $10 million actually, and then total the Olympian Drive and the overpass, and then the Lincoln Avenue portion was $4.1 million, and that was federal and Champaign County and City of Urbana. So you don't build these roads ever by yourself, and these are the examples of the kinds of collaboration you just have to get these projects done.
Talking with Mayor Diane Marlin from Urbana, the voice you just heard, and of course Deb Finan, Mayor of Champaign as well, here on the NewsHour in a special extended interview. You guys wrap around the University of Illinois, and maybe it's a little too early to be thinking about it, but one thing I know that comes up every year is unofficial. Typically, it's more in your purview, Mayor Finan, because yes, more of the bars are in Champaign and
I
all
think
that.
They have two campus bars in Urbana, am I right?
But I wondered if you had thought through any of that together, if there's anything you guys have to address on that front, or are there other issues with the U of I that you're working on together?
Well, 2 days after I took office, I had a meeting with Deb and in the chancellor's office, and the topic was unofficial. So that actually was the very first meeting we had on the U of I campus, and you know, we're continue to be concerned about that. I think we all agreed if it went away tomorrow, we'd be thrilled. It's not going to. So the efforts are to contain it and to make it as safe as it can be.
And I think there have been years where Urbana has adopted the same, you know, mayor's emergency order and has not, but I'm hopeful that, you know, they will adopt the same order.
It's where we need to be consistent.
It continues to get less and less exciting for students. It's just not what it used to be. And I say that with glee in my heart, not in a sad way in any way. And so I think that, you know, we'll continue to do what we've been doing and try to make it less fun and hope that they direct their attention to something else.
And I see another area where I'm very hopeful is the new Carl, Illinois College of Medicine. I see a lot of opportunity for the communities to collaborate with the university, and we've met with university leadership and Carl leadership on that as well. The university is the largest employer. It's the reason we're all here, and they have a tremendous impact on the two cities and, well, the entire region. And one of my goals is to really have a clear channels of communication among the leadership of the cities and the university.
Hey, this has been fun. This has been great. I hope we get a chance to do it again. Really appreciate you coordinating your schedules to both be here at the same time, because I know that's no small feat either.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. We had fun.
Champaign Mayor Deb Finan and Urbana Mayor Diane Marlin in a conversation we had back in October of this year. When we come back, another conversation with a celebrity. This time, our Tim Dittman gets a little giddy. We're back on A Penny for Your Thoughts on this day after Christmas. We're looking back at some of our best conversations from 2017. Well, it was one of the worst kept secrets in Champaign-Urbana. It wasn't much of a surprise when it was announced that Garth Brooks was coming to town to play the State Farm Center, and he ended up going for 4 shows in April of this year. The event was anticipated to be so big, organizers even moved the Illinois Marathon from its usual weekend. Our Tim Dittman had a chance to go one-on-one with Garth Brooks, and as you'll probably be able to tell, he was pretty excited to be talking to the country superstar.
I have to start on a personal note because my third grade teacher in Bloomington, Illinois is Mara Sokan. She is one of your super fans.
Really?
And she, when I talked to her before this, she says, oh, tell him I said hi because he knows me.
I love Mara.
And I got into your music because in third grade, she would always play it during our recess. She'd have Garth posters on the
really?
Wall.
Yes, that's
on Friday, we would watch your DVDs. And so it really got me going at a young age.
Gracie,
so she's really good. Maybe you can start by talking a little bit about that. These fans that go to dozens and hundreds of shows, what does that mean?
Yeah, well, you got to take Mara and realize that she's a unique individual. So if there are anybody else like her, I don't know them, but just the fact that you love, hopefully, a music so much. Forget about the artist, but hopefully the music has done something in your life. For me, James Taylor, I can tell you right now, man, our family growing up, the last of six kids and a dad that was that ran the household, it got physical. And physical as a smaller kid is always, you know, a little scary. But if you walk in that house and James Taylor was playing, the whole house got along. Everybody was beautiful. So how do you thank a guy for that, right? So I think it's just the music. And I'm hoping that's what something in that music has got her through times, through celebration and times of when she needed help. That's what I'm hoping it's about.
I'm not sure if you're aware of this. There was supposed to be a marathon here this weekend, 17,000 runners.
Really?
It got moved to the weekend prior so the city could accommodate you. And I'm not trying to make you feel guilty by any means, but I'm just curious, does that happen often where a city says, we're just going to shut down so Garth can do his thing for 4 days?
Well, it's weird. You got to remember, I've been on the other side of that. Stanley Cup came through Tampa, and we got kicked out. So it's funny which side you know. I'm just sad because I wanted to run in it. You know, that's my thing. I'm a runner. You believe that?
I want to ask you, too, about We Shall Be Free.
Yes.
That's kind of been back in the news lately.
Yes,
and,
has.
You know, with the political climate, it's kind of taken on a whole new meaning. Your thoughts about getting that back out in front of everybody?
I got to tell you, the people brought it back out. The signs for it have been staggering. And I got to tell you how lucky I feel to be part of a song that is more relevant now than when it was written. And I thought it was relevant when it was written. So that's the mark of a beautiful piece. But here's my regret on it. That beautiful piece talks about dealing with turmoil. Unfortunately, we're always going to have turmoil. So I just hope it brings some kind of healing or some kind of bridge to get you through this thing. But We Shall Be Free is a song that, you know, in a million years, people don't know who Garth Brooks is. I don't care. If people don't know Friends in Low Places, then so be it. But the one song I hope they do remember, We Shall Be Free.
So I got a look at your contract for these shows.
Yes, sir.
And I was amazed at how clean it was. You hear about these artists who are requesting everything. You know, Van Halen said, we don't want any brown M&Ms, crazy stuff like that. You're a pretty easygoing guy.
Our request is whatever the other bands don't want, we'll take. That's our thing. And truthfully, man, we just want a place to play. You know, there's a song called The Old Stuff that we have that starts off Fresh Horses. And it's just talking about, it says begging for a place to play. I don't care how long you're in this business, we're going to be begging for a place to play, man, because getting to play music is the greatest gig on the planet.
I want to follow up on what I asked you during the news conference about you embracing new media,
yeah,
and especially the Twitter and the Facebook and
right,
the Studio G. Was there a moment where you kind of said, wow, a lot of people are on this, I better get on it too?
Well, what I didn't get about it, because I learned through it through my daughters watching them. Mm-hmm. One, privacy was a tough thing because, you know, our family's very private. And two, just it always seemed to be spewing. It's like, turn it off. But if you can turn that spewing into a conversation, because you know how it is, me and you are going to talk a lot different to each other if we're face-to-face and we're accountable for what we're saying. You turn that into a conversation, it becomes accountable, and it becomes a good conversation. That's what we wanted to do. So Inside Studio G was born, where you people ask you stuff, you tell them right back, they'll talk right back to you. That's how it should be.
Any other words for your fans in Champaign?
No, just thank you. Thank you a million times over, man, for my children's life, for our life. Thank you.
Tim Dittman and Garth Brooks back in April of this year. In the final half hour of our program, we'll remember a couple of close friends that we lost this year. This is A Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Scott Beatty. Hope the Christmas holiday was a good one for you. On this day after Christmas, we're taking some time to listen back to some of the best conversations from 2017 on our airwaves. In this final half hour, we remember a few close friends who left us. In June, we said goodbye to Tony Clements, the one-time director of campus recreation at the University of Illinois and an official scorer at Illinois basketball games, also known for his stand-up comedy and a frequent guest on our sister station, Light Rock 97.5. It seemed like there was hardly a person in the Champaign-Urbana community that didn't know Tony Clements, but one who knew him best was Bruce Swartz, who several decades ago was on staff here at WDWS.
Bruce joined me on the NewsHour shortly after Tony's death to remember him. Bruce, first of all, condolences. A day many years ago, you worked here at DWS many decades ago. Right. It's good to have you back in here, but I know we would prefer it under different circumstances.
Sure. Tony was a treasure for the community, for sure, but he was among those three or four closest friends I have who know everything about me and still loved me, you know, and this is a hard day.
It is. It was a little bit anticipated knowing the decline he had took, but sure. In his final days and weeks here, what was his spirits like?
It was interesting. Every time that I'd sit down and talk to him, at some point I would look at him and say, Tony, how's your spirit? And every time, no matter how bad he felt and how bad he looked and what struggles he had been going through that day, every time, as soon as I asked that question, he would smile and say, my spirit is good. The one time he didn't was just last weekend when I saw him in the hospital, and I asked him in a quiet, private moment, how's your spirit? And he smiled and said, my spirit's ready. So he was at peace with what was going on, and I'm grateful for that. Right up until the end, he still had his deep laugh and sense of humor, and he could, one of those rare abilities to just see something funny in anything that happened in life. I know Jim and Mike talked about that this morning some on Penny, but that's true. I mean, we would be wandering around just doing things, and he'd start laughing about something and point it out to me, and I wouldn't have seen it. But as soon as I did, you realize just the absurdity of some things that were going on. And that's how he looked at life. Find something funny about life to make everything enjoyable.
You were on stage with him for many years for his comedy cafes. How did that all get started?
Believe it or not, it all started in the basement of my church. I go to a Little American Baptist Church in Mahomet, First Baptist Church, and we were looking to try to do something to raise some significant mission funds for, I think it was a project to help buy some animals for tribes in Africa. And so I approached Tony about the possibility of just coming out and doing some stand-up comedy. We had the church organist and pianist were husband and wife team, and they played dinner music. And Bill Myers, who owned the Arby's franchise here for several years, he cooked up a bunch of steaks, and so we had dinner and dinner music. And then Tony did a good 45 minutes worth of stand-up comedy, and we just had a great time. And the next week he called me and said, do you think we could do that for the community? And so that's when he got me and Mike and several other people together just to talk about doing that. And we pooled our money, went to the very first one was at the convention center on Madison in Springfield, and we were hoping we could sell 100 tickets, because if we could do that, we'd get our money back. Well, we sold 330, and the next year we went to two nights, and it became an annual event, and then eventually we moved just for convenience sake, and because we were all ready to try something new, we moved it to the Virginia. But I was his foil for 25 years of comedy cafe shows and shows that we did other places too. And it was, we would begin planning next year's show at the post show dinner. We'd already be laughing about thinking about, you know, what can we do next year?
And you were always in black, right?
Yeah, I was the man in black. Tony would make fun of me. I'm not a small person, and but he would talk about how black was supposed to be a slimming color, and he'd say, take a few poses, Bruce. And so I'd stake some goofy poses, and Tony would look at the audience and say, "Well, it's just a theory." So I was the butt end of a lot of his jokes, but that was all by plan, and we had so much fun doing it, and it was so enjoyable because a massive cross section of the community came. It was every demographic you could think of came, because, and part of what we did is that we would raise money. We would ask some people who really believed in the show to buy tickets for folks who were less advantaged, and we would give those tickets to agencies that worked with the poor. So they got to they got a night out of good fun and music and comedy. So it's a wonderful time.
Is there a memory, or I'm sure there are many, and I'm sure there are many cherished moments, but one you might share, something you'll cherish about Tony?
Well, cherish about Tony, everything that I, one of the things that a lot of people don't know, I mean, they may assume this, Tony is one of the wisest people I've ever known. Smart, incredibly gifted, very artistic in a way that... He just looked at life in ways that other people didn't. And where other people would look at things and see obstacles, he literally would see them as possibilities. And that was his comedy was built around that. But even more, the way he managed life, managed the people that worked with him, that's how he managed all of that. The people who knew him and worked closely with him at the university, many times I was in his office when he'd receive a call from a very high-ranking member of the administration asking his advice on a certain situation and how to handle things. He was very well appreciated for his wisdom and his knowledge and his love of the university. I mean, the one thing he would remind people continuously is that the university was about the students. You know, when sports fans who were not students were complaining about what things weren't going on to please them, especially if they felt like students were getting somewhat preferential treatment, Tony was quick to say, if those students weren't here, we wouldn't be having a basketball game tonight anyhow. So he always remembered. And one of the reasons that the Arc was built and the students approved that construction overwhelmingly was because they spent a year just listening to students. They didn't travel around trying to figure out what other people were doing. They asked the kids who were going to school here, what do you want? And designed what the students want, and they approved it almost at record-breaking numbers.
Bruce, we're short on time, and there's many memories of Tony that'll continue to be shared here, I'm sure, over the weekend and at the services and all that to come. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for spending a little bit of time with us. We appreciate it, and our deepest sympathies and condolences.
Thank you.
And that conversation from June of this year. When we come back, we remember Dave Shaw.
Going to Kansas City, Kansas City, here I come. They got some crazy little women there in a...
Welcome back to this edition of A Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Scott Beatty. We're listening back to some of our best radio conversations from 2017. On May 22nd, we lost a friend and one of the best broadcast journalists Champaign-Urbana has ever known in Dave Shaw. He died at the age of 75. He spent more than three decades at WCIA-TV before joining our ranks here at WDWS. We didn't know it then, but when he appeared on our DWS morning show with Dave Gentry and Elizabeth Hess in February of this year, it was his last time gracing our airwaves. So happened to be the day after President Trump held his first news conference while in office, and Dave offered up his thoughts on that and many more things going on in our community and in our world.
He's here. He's live in the studio. He's living legend, Dave Shaw. As I said in the promo, we say that because it aggravates him. How are you, Dave Shaw?
Well, I'm just wondering what I'm doing here.
Well, glad to have you with us. And that's how some people felt at the press conference yesterday.
What a mess that was. I don't know who to blame.
Don't you think that President Nixon would have loved to have had a freewheeling press conference like that at some point?
Well, I don't know, but I know what I thought, and I didn't like either side, to tell you the truth.
I'll bet.
This can't go on, and it's only been a month, you know. So,
give us your observations on it, because I'd like to hear.
Let's get serious, okay? And this is serious business, and it's not a Broadway show up there.
So the president set the tone, and that was a problem. What was your reaction to some of the press?
Well, they just got into it with him, and you see everybody jumping up with waving their arms like they usually do. Let's bring a little order out of this, or there will be no news conference. That'll be the next step.
That's an interesting observation.
Yeah.
Dave, as a former news director, would you have handled someone like Kellyanne Conway or Sean Spicer? Would you have backed down? Would you have handled them differently? Because I don't remember anybody like them in history.
Well, there's a bunch of them going on right now, that not just those two, but yeah, it's a whole new world out there, folks, beginning a month ago.
It really is. I mean, President Trump just seemed like some of the observations he made, he said some things that you just don't expect to hear a president say. I mean, he was literally thinking out loud on a couple of things that...
I mean, this was Saturday Night Live on Thursday afternoon. Well, it just kept getting better. And, I don't know. Times have changed, haven't they?
I guess so. But the president seems to need somebody to be there to go, okay, we're done here.
Remember President Eisenhower?
How dignified that
was. That
was
a low-key, wasn't it?
It sure was. I want to ask you one more thing, too, while we're talking about this. They said since President Trump's been in office, the stock market has gone up. And they say historically... this was like he came in third. What I thought was interesting was it was the stock market jumped for this period of time. Mm-hmm. It was the other two, the front two, were Lyndon Johnson was number one and John F. Kennedy was number two. And they were both Democrats. And I find that interesting that the stock market would have jumped that much, especially coming out of Eisenhower to Kennedy.
Well, and you keep thinking it has reached its peak. You know, it's going to go the other way. Mm-hmm. And hasn't happened yet, has it?
No, it sure hasn't.
Wow.
I have more non-political questions than I do political, but one more. One more. Kennedy has thrown his name in the ring for our governor. Do you think that is a good thing for the state? I think Bruce Rauner ran that he wouldn't run for re-election, but it sounds like he's headed that way.
I think he will.
Yes.
There's so much to get straightened out in Springfield, and a lot of that, how that is worked out, is going to depend on what happens to Bruce Rauner. But now Chris Kennedy's got, there's going to be a lot of baggage there, I think, especially from the Board of Trustees days.
I think he's popular, though, north of I-80. He's controversial.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
Speaking of down here and controversial, everybody likes John Gross as a person. The fan base is frustrated. You are part of the fan base. How do you see this playing out?
Well, you got to win some games, and it's not happening. And it doesn't. I don't think it looks too good. And I do like John Gross. I think he's quite an honorable man. And but you got to win games. And I think it's going to be the athletic director is going to decide what happens. But I think the good recruiting class, I think that's holding things back a little bit as to making the decision. But got to win games.
Do you think Josh Whitman is going to make a splash and needs to grab somebody with name recognition?
Yeah, but who's out there with name recognition right now? No one's come up with the name. And of course, no one thought of Lovie Smith either, right?
Yeah, that came out of nowhere. So who knows what could possibly happen?
Right.
Another question for you about your alma mater. You went to Champaign High School.
Right.
Which is, now we don't, it doesn't exist, but Champaign falls on that. Are you happy where it is and get some overhauls on that? Are you happy with how that turned out? We had the high school north of town, and that was rejected. And now the voters have unanimous. I mean, 67% of the voters wanted this referendum.
Mm-hmm. Well, I, with all that space out there, I think it would have been nice. You get open field and space. I think that would have been nice school, but I think it's nice to keep things in town. And it's going to be, well, it's going to be quite a project, isn't it? It's going to take forever. And buildings have to come down. And I'm glad that, you know, I think most of us who graduated from Champaign High School are glad to see it stick around in the city. Class of 59. See a bench out in front? That's the benches from the class of 1959.
I never knew that. I passed that a lot.
What's really neat is we've got an email group, the 59ers, and it's fun to keep in touch with. There's a group, maybe 20 of us, that keep in touch with what's going on. And I'm sure there are a lot of groups like that in high school groups. Okay. That it's a neat way to stay in touch.
When you talk about having a bench out in front of the school, you're talking about the original old Champaign High, right?
You're not
talking about... Oh,
no,
it's in front of Central?
No, I'm talking about in front of Central.
Okay.
I went 6 years there. I went junior high for 3 years, and then they made it a high school. So I was stuck around for three more years. And that's when they made the change. But no, the one on University Avenue.
Now, your dad was on the faculty, right?
Yeah, both on Green Street and on University.
Before we get to the anniversary of the ice storm, I know we're going to get into that. One, I always like to ask you a towny question, towny to towny. And you've seen so many changes in this town, and we've gotten so much development. Portillo's headed now. What restaurant or store, if you could pick anything from around the world, what would you like to see here in Champaign?
Ruth Chris.
Steakhouse.
Yes.
Okay, wow. That didn't take him long to come up with that.
No. I've never been there.
Wait,
but I think I think it sounds good.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's incredible. Okay.
I know there's one in Indianapolis, not far from where my brother-in-law and sister-in-law live. And, it just sounds appealing and expensive.
Okay. I thought you were going to go Trader Joe, but we'll go with Ruth Chris.
Nah.
Okay.
That's an endorsement.
Back to the ice storm. We're
well,
in the
everybody knows Trader Joe's a big deal.
Trader Joe's would be fabulous.
Especially anybody that comes from the burbs.
Yes. Now we are, let's see, this weekend getting up to 65 degrees ridiculously in February. But you remember you don't remember, but there was an ice storm.
Well, I do remember 27 years ago.
Do you? Okay.
1990. And the night before things really took hold, there was a basketball game. And when we came home from the game, you could hear, the trees rustling and the ice falling and the rain. And I think for some, I think Jim Turpin's mentioned the fact he was without power for like 8 days or something like that.
Really?
But it was not a pleasant time.
Valentine's Day surprise.
Valentine's Day. They still they made up some coffee cups and some T-shirts for all those who made it through the big ice storm.
That was a wild time, the Valentine's Day ice storm of 1990.
But there was a basketball game that night?
Yeah, Illinois. I think it was Penn State they played. And, I can't remember the score.
Seriously, I'm disappointed in you.
it'll come back to you.
He'll have a tie to it somehow.
But I just remember hearing the trees and the ice falling as we got home that night from the game.
It was pretty wild. One of the craziest news stories that I saw one time, you swore up and down. There was it was Mario Andretti wrecked a race car over at Indy. You remember that? And it flew through the air.
Yep, yep.
Big, they showed it on TV stations all across the country. And I said, you're telling me that you have nothing to do with this news story? He said, no, I don't think I have any connection to that one whatsoever. And then the next day he comes in and goes, oh, by the way, the photographer that shot that, used to work for me at 3.
Everyone knows Dave.
Always
Dave knows
a connection.
Everyone.
There you go. That's right. That's right.
All right.
We still got a lot of them over there at Indianapolis. Chris Wedlick just... change stations.
You
over
can't
there.
You can't turn on a news station over there without seeing somebody from this market.
And Chicago too. Channel 7 in particular has
is that right?
A lot of alumni from Channel 3.
Impressive.
All right, Dave Shaw, local legend. Thanks for being with us this morning. We appreciate
thanks, Dave.
Dave Shaw's final appearance on our airwaves back in February of 2017,
and we miss him. Well, that'll do it for this special edition of A Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Scott Beatty. Thanks for spending some time with us as we look back on this year. If you missed any of the program, you can find it at our website as a podcast on WDWS.com or on iTunes. I'll be with you for the rest of this week live, starting again tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, right here on News Talk 1400. The news is next. Have a great day.